Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Muy buenos dias. Muchas enchiladas, everybody. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. As I've mentioned before, I have so many emails. I'd like to read a few, but I also want to take your phone calls. 888-914-9149. Here's a quick one that came in. This is from Juan. He says, I had a question regarding blessing one's home the right way. I recently came in contact with another person who's Catholic. We were having some issues at our home. Last year, our eldest daughter, 20 years old, brought in a Ouija board and tarot cards. She has eliminated them from our home and from her last year, and from her last year in August. I think maybe he means them from her home. About 2 weeks ago, a priest from our parish came to bless our home. We've been dealing with some mental health issues with our teenage daughter. This is the reason we invited the priest from the parish. As we were talking, he had mentioned I should bless our home with incense. And along with the incense, I should spread seeds around the house. Flax, mustard seed, seed grain, salt, etc. Herbs, rosemary, basil, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. No, he didn't say that part. I added that part. As I burn the incense, spread the seeds, and put them around the house, he said I should be praying the 12 truths of the world in Spanish, las doce verdades del mundo. Also, the Apostles' Creed, the Magnificat, la Santa Cruz prayer, and the Our Father, as I bless our home from evil spirits. This should help with eliminating any evil spirits from our home. My question is this okay according to the Catholic Church? Do you have any recommendations? And he says, thanks and God bless you, Patrick. Well, Juan, you don't need to do all those things. First of all, there's a big difference between the incense that's used at Mass at church and this person telling you to burn sage and other herbs and plant seeds or at least place seeds around your house. The difference is that the incense, which we see in Scripture, for example, in Revelation chapter 5 as one example, not only was incense used in the temple, but it's also seen in the heavenly temple, the heavenly sanctuary in the book of Revelation, as a sign of the prayers of the holy ones. Those of us saints on earth, as well as the saints in heaven, the holy ones, our prayers ascend before the throne of God, and that is symbolized by incense. So at Mass, when you see the priest incensing the altar, he's not driving away evil spirits. I'm pretty sure that the demons don't like that, but that's not why he's doing it. It's not being done to drive away evil spirits. It's being done to show the holiness and the sanctity of the altar of sacrifice at Mass and also of the sanctuary itself, which is a copy made by human hands of the heavenly sanctuary. So that incense that you smell and you see, it's intended to remind you that this is like our prayers ascending before God. So I could imagine that somebody might say, well, you're saying don't burn sage as a kind of incense in my house, but they use incense at Mass. Well, it's two different things and two different reasons. Secondly, this sounds to me, and I can only go by what you wrote, and I appreciate you giving me as much detail as you did. This sounds to me kind of like folk religion, kind of like a mixture of superstitious folk rituals with Christianity, kind of mixing in these prayers together. You don't have to say an incantation. You don't have to say certain prayers. You certainly don't have to put seeds in different places in your house. That's all not true. And I would just eliminate that from your way of thinking. Rather, not only can you bless your home if you want to, but it's even better if you have the parish priest come to your house. And if he blesses the home, and the traditional way of doing that is the parish priest would go room to room with some holy water, and he would say prayers of deliverance and prayers of spiritual warfare, designed to thwart any evil influence that might be in your home. And he would bless the rooms with holy water, and he would impart his priestly blessing on your home. That is the best way to do it. It's not magic. It's not superstitious. It's just the priest doing what priests are called to do, which is, as Jesus sent the 70 disciples out, you may remember in the Gospels, he sends them out and he tells them to go two by two, go into the towns, and he says, heal people and cast out demons. And that's what they did. And they came back amazed. Lord, even the demons are subject to us. I can't even believe it, they were saying to themselves. So it's not that the priest is going to perform an exorcism. There is an installed ministry of exorcist in the diocese for that. That's something unique and specific, and it's regulated directly by the bishop. But the priest has that role in a minor sense as exorcist, in that he can, for example, in the traditional form of baptism, and it's true even today in parishes that follow the new rite of the Mass, even if they use the extended ritual for baptism, the priest exorcises the water. Did you know that? So that basin of water, or whatever water is going to be used for the baptism, the traditional form is that the priest performs an exorcism on the water. You know, this is water that's set apart. It's dedicated for the people of God and for God. And so it's that kind of ministry that the priest has, which is you're not going to do anything one way or the other by putting seeds in different places in your home or burning sage or, you know, who knows what they're telling you to burn. Don't do those things. Just follow the prescribed way that the church does this, and I think you'll see an improvement. Now, the fact that your daughter got rid of the tarot cards and got rid of the Ouija board, that's a good thing. And if you're kind of, I'm trying to read between the lines here, if you're seeing a kind of lingering, what appears to be a kind of lingering malign presence in your home, all the more reason to have your parish priest come and formally bless your home. Go room by room, sprinkle each room with holy water. And then the last thing I'll mention is I strongly advocate that you enthrone an image of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary in your home, in some place of honor, some place where people are likely to see it, so that when they come into your home, they'll know, oh, okay, these people are Catholic. These people are followers of Jesus Christ. And not only human entities who come into your home, but also angelic entities of the fallen kind, when they see that, that is bothersome to them, and they don't want to be around that. So having an image of our Lord and our Lady in your home is not only good in terms of keeping a sort of electrified fence, a keep-out sign when it comes to demonic activity, but also it is a great way to raise your children and for you yourself to be seeing every day these images of Jesus and Mary. It will help you deepen your own love for the Lord. So those are my bits of advice. I hope you find that helpful. 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Joseph now, waiting patiently in St. Louis. Good morning, Joseph. Welcome.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to ask. So I had a question about swearing, or not swearing oaths, but cussing, bad words. Okay. Like I know the Bible, it says that somewhere in Proverbs, and I think it's in Colossians 2 where Paul says, you know, don't give in to malice, anger, and foul speech. And so I was wondering, does the church have an infallible, I mean, words change meaning all the time, but does the church have an infallible list of bad words that we shouldn't say? Because to me, it seems like, I don't know if this is true or not, but to me, it seems like, well, society decides what words are taboo or what words shouldn't be said. And so, like, does the church have a list? Or, because it seems really subjective. Well, I don't think that word's bad, but other people say that it is bad. And so I was wondering if you could expound on that a little.
Sure. Let me begin with I think the essence of your question is no, the church does not have a list of words that you're forbidden to say. So the church expects you and me to be mature. And so as you grow in Christian maturity, you realize that certainly blasphemy, which is expressly forbidden by the Holy Bible, anything that would be blasphemous and disrespectful toward God, toward Our Lady, toward the saints, that is strictly forbidden. And you can read about it in Exodus chapter 20. You can begin there and see what God says about that. So blasphemy always and everywhere is wrong. Now, and don't play it yet, Cyrus. Don't play it yet. Don't play it yet. That's always always and everywhere wrong. Now, the grayer area is the question of profanity, and that would be using like four-letter words or saying damn or, you know, just a variety of lighter impact words and more heavy-duty impact words, like F-bombs, that kind of thing. So what I advocate is that we should avoid all of it. I mean, absolutely under all circumstances, never, ever, ever take the name of the Lord in vain. Never take his name in vain. Because as it says in Exodus chapter 20, God says, this is a sin that I will punish. He adds it like an extra warning to this. You know, if you commit this sin of blasphemy, it will not go unpunished. So that, I think, should get our attention. But quite honestly, if you ask me, using four-letter words, saying damn kind of indiscriminately or things of that nature, it to me is a form of verbal violence because you are assaulting other people around you who hear this with your bad language. And I would also argue that to speak that way is unbecoming of a Christian. I've always thought a lot about what St. Paul says in Philippians chapter 4. He says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And what you think about is expressed in how you speak. So people who go around, you know, using profanity, and quite frankly, many people nowadays do that, it's a sign of the inner person. It's like a window into the soul. You're seeing something about that person's inner reality. And if it's expressed with crude language, four-letter words, God forbid, profanity, I mean, that's not a pleasant sight. And it indicates that the person is not particularly spiritually mature. It's one of those indicators. So for that reason, and plenty of others, I would conclude by saying what the Bible says in Colossians 4:6, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer everyone. And in James 3, it says, the tongue is a fire. The tongue is an unrighteous world among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the cycle of nature, and set on fire by hell. For every beast and bird of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by humankind, but no human being can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth comes blessing and cursing. My brethren, this ought not to be so. Boom. So I think those passages are really the essence of the answer to your question. That although the church doesn't have a list of words that says you can't use, I mean, there's no need for that. The church says, grow up, be mature, listen to what the Holy Bible says, and live accordingly. So those are my thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, well, thanks for citing those other passages, that one from James, because I've read parts of James, and where one part that struck me was, I'll have to paraphrase it, but it says the tongue can be great, but the tongue can be very dangerous. And so how we use it, something else you said struck me, where I never thought of that. You know, if we use a bunch of profanity, like if someone does that all the time, that's a sign that there's something going on
inside.
You said it's a sign that there's a wound, an interior wound or something that's unsettling inside themselves. It needs to be healed. Is that basically...
Well, kind of. What I was driving at was that when you're around somebody who's swearing and using profanity and, God forbid, blasphemy, that's a window into the soul. You're seeing. Well, let me put it this way. I'd rather say what Jesus said. Jesus said in Mark chapter 7, "What comes out of a man is what defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, fornication, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a man. So my point is simply kind of trying to echo what Jesus said, is that when you're around somebody who is using profanity and always swearing, you know, at the drop of a hat, and it doesn't even have to be that chronic, it could be occasional, but you're seeing what Jesus is, or rather you're hearing what Jesus is talking about, because that is a manifestation of inner problems to greater or lesser degrees. That's the point I was trying to make.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick, for your insight. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Joseph. And I thank you for your phone call. Thanks. Before we move on to the next call, I'll just share that I learned this lesson in an interesting way growing up. And I look back on it now. My father's going to be 85 this year, and he's lived a long life. And I have never in my life heard my father swear. I've never heard him use even like to say damn or anything like that. And never, ever, ever, ever under any circumstances did he ever use the Lord's name in vain. And I mean, like when I was growing up, I'm in the car with my dad. He gets cut off in traffic. A lot of people, you know, they might even, you know, give the good luck sign, you know, with their hand. Cyrus, I'm not saying you'd do that, but you've seen that, haven't you?
No comment.
Yeah. Let's. My dad never swore, ever. And I never thought much about it at the time. And he didn't sit me down and didn't talk to me and my brothers and sisters. I'm the oldest of eight. But he never, like, told us, don't swear. But he just never did. Never, ever, that I can ever remember. Even when he hit his thumb with a hammer when he was working on his workbench in the garage. Or even when some, you know, sudden problem cropped up or someone cut him off in traffic. He just never did it. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this, my mom too, by the way, I don't want to suggest that she did. She never did either. But I think I was particularly impacted in this way by my father, as boys often are. And it was only later in life, only as I grew up, and I freely admit, although I'm not proud of it, that when I was like a freshman in high school, I went through my little phase in which I experimented with bad language. Like,
you
I never
rebel.
I know. I never blasphemy, thank God. But I went through that phase. And you know what? It just struck me as, this is really stupid. Why am I even saying that? I mean, the other guys were saying it, so I thought maybe I'd try to fit in. And I realized, this is stupid. So I was maybe 13 years old when I realized the dumbness of the whole thing, and I just stopped cold turkey, and that was it. So my season of experimentation might have lasted a week, all told. But my point is, only later in life, and I looked back on this, and I realized my father never swore. And he was teaching me and the rest of my siblings by example. That's what was so profound for me, was that he was teaching me by how he lived his life, and my mom too, of course, how he lived his life. And so that personally was a great reinforcement for me, because, you know, there were times when, maybe as all of us have temptations, I was tempted to blurt something out. And I remember more than once thinking, what would my father think if he were here and he heard me say that? And then it's like, okay, end of story. And it's never been a problem for me. But the other thing is this, and I know we have to take a break. Cyrus has that look on his face. The other thing, and I'll leave it at this, is it made me more aware, and maybe the best way to say it made me more sensitive to this issue. And I recall when I was a little kid, my mom would, you know, because we would like be out in public or something, and people would swear, they would blaspheme God. And my mom taught me from the time I was a little kid, it's one of the earliest memories I have, is that whenever I would hear somebody, she taught me to do this, if ever you hear somebody who's taking God's name in vain, make a little act of reparation and say out loud or in the privacy of your own mind, if you want to, praised be the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, as a way of making a bit of reparation. Somebody blasphemes, you make a bit of reparation. It's like somebody uses a spray can to write graffiti on the wall, you follow up with some paint and you paint that off. You know, so now it's covered up. And that never left me. And so I just offer it to all of you for what it's worth. For me, it's worth more than gold. And I do credit my parents tremendously for teaching me this lesson. I have to take a break, but I'm going to be right back right after this. The number is 888-914-9149. And here's a song, by the way. We're going to play this song. And those of you who are old enough, you'll remember it. 1975, in the summer of 75, Frankie Valli came out with a hit called Swearing to God. Now, we're not going to go out to this song. We're going to switch. Just play a little bit of it, though, Cyrus. I just want people to get a taste of it. And see? That was a hit song.
I'm so nervous because I've never heard this song before.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I don't know if I should be playing this or not, Patrick.
No, it's okay. The reason you're playing it, okay, we don't have to play it anymore, but that song promoted blasphemy. And you may say, oh, come on, you wet blanket. No. That song normalized taking God's name in vain. Now, it wasn't the first thing in culture to do that by far. But this, you know, catchy tune, snapping your fingers, humming along to the music, singing the music. And without even realizing it, people are actually taking God's name in vain. I found that movie, I was 15 years old when it came out, and I was really offended by that song. I haven't lost my sense of indignation. May I say to you. So anyway, let's go out to a real song, Cyrus, with no blasphemy and no misogyny with my hamburger, please. You're flustered.
I am flustered. I wasn't ready. All right.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, you still want a song? Oh,
I
man.
Do. Let's
I'm,
go.
I am
press the button.
Floundering.
Press the button. Press that button.
I'll be
right
carrying
there.
That way.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right, let's get this road show back on the road. Let's go to Victoria in San Diego. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning, Mr. Madrid. I just wanted to tell you that the period of time your dad was raised, mm-hmm. and that they didn't curse, because I came from a family that I never heard cursing.
No. I don't know if, I mean, I don't doubt your experience, so I'm sure that was true for your family, but plenty, let me tell you, Victoria, plenty of my dad's peers who were the same age as him, I did hear them swear. So I don't know that that's necessarily true. May have been true here and there, but I think generally people swore then like they do now.
Yeah, maybe, but in my house, I never even knew what a swear word was till I married
a
man, or met him and then married him, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, my kids once in a while curse, and I come out and tell them, you're intelligent. There's other ways you can express that you're upset. You don't need to curse.
Right.
That is not acceptable.
I agree. My theory, Victoria, is that it's a form of verbal violence. And just like I wouldn't punch you or slap you, I wouldn't want to use words around you that had the net effect of being violent towards you. And so that's my take on it. And I feel in a certain way, like other people who just indiscriminately use profanity without even realizing it, it's like they're just hitting people with their words, and I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
Well, we're on the same page. I do appreciate it, Victoria. Thank you. How about Chris now in Feasterville, PA, where nobody goes hungry? Everybody is warm and well-fed. Hi, Chris.
Patrick, good morning. I just have a couple of very brief questions for you. First, on the subject cursing that we were just discussing, sometimes you'll hear people habitually say, oh, God, you know, something along that line. Just going to ask you, would you say that would definitely fall under the term of taking the serious sin of taking the Lord's name in vain?
Definitely. 100%. I absolutely do. I realize that I'm probably in the tiny minority of people who feel that way, but I'm convinced that that is taking the Lord's name in vain.
I recently had a discussion with a priest, Patrick, several months ago, and I brought up the subject, people that use these four-letter words, I'm not talking about sacrilege, Lord's name in vain, but people that use four-letter words, you know, we don't, you know, they are F-words, so forth and so on, not really loud to others, but sometimes to themselves, if they get annoyed with something. And the priest told me that he did not think that that is a serious sin, and I just wanted to get your take on what he said.
Well, I mean, far be it from me to, you know, gainsay Father McGillicuddy, but I think it is. I mean, let's take a look at, let me just pull out my Holy Bible here. Let's take a quick look at Exodus chapter 20 and see what we see. So if you go to Exodus chapter 20, let me go way back. There we go. Okay, so I got to hang on to it here. This is verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave unpunished him who takes his name in vain. Now, that, of course, deals specifically with the issue of blasphemy, but profanity is closely linked to blasphemy, I think, and it is, I'd say, more in keeping with the spirit of the commandment, not only to not take the Lord's name in vain, but also to, as St. Paul talks about, have speech that is gracious. And it's not gracious to use four-letter words. So I think it can definitely be a mortal sin. It may not necessarily be a mortal sin in any given instance because somebody may be habituated to it. And so there may be, and we have to keep a clear distinction between, you know, the objective quality of a sin and the subjective quality of a sin. So objectively, an act may be seriously sinful, but subjectively, whether perhaps due to ignorance or bad upbringing or extreme stress, there could be any number of things that can greatly mitigate or greatly reduce someone's subjective culpability. So I don't mean to say that it's necessarily a serious sin any given time somebody does it, but I would argue that the root of chronic swearing and the person who allowed himself to get into this habit early on, that was probably a serious sin, if I had to guess. Could have been done out of ignorance, so only God knows these things. But objectively speaking, I think it's something that should be strongly avoided. And you said you had,
Patrick,
a couple other questions.
I just have one other question. Radically different subject, very brief. The inspiring hymn on Eagle's Wings, you know, taken from Psalm 91, is often sung at Catholic funerals. I think you mentioned some weeks ago, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you said that you simply cannot stand that hymn, and I just wanted to ask you why.
Yeah. Thanks, Cyrus. I don't like it at all. And I'll tell you why. I don't know how old you are, but I'm guessing you and I are probably at least the same age. And
I'm actually somewhat older than you, Patrick.
Okay, well then you'll have a clearer memory than I do. Please, Cyrus, my ears are bleeding. Please. Oh, thank you. I was just about to reach for the duct tape. How are we doing on the duct tape, by the way? We well supplied?
We are
well, are we running
supplied?
Low?
We have okay. So much duct tape.
All right. So, Chris, back to your question. No, I don't like the song. And I realize that music, like art and food and other things, it's a matter of taste. I realize that. And I realize that a lot of people really like that song. So, fair enough. I've got no quarrel with people who like that song. I just don't like it. And the reason I bring up the age issue is because, as you do, I remember the horrible 1970s, the liturgical horrors that we witnessed in the 1970s with just banal, pedestrian, sappy, cartoonified music. And this song by Michael Jonkis, to my mind, sort of epitomizes the worst of the liturgical music that came out in the 1970s. And so I not only don't like the song itself, I mean, I love the scripture underneath it, of course, but that song has the knock-on effect, as the British would say, of reminding me of the miasma of liturgical craziness in the 1970s and 1980s. So it's kind of a double whammy for me. How's that for an answer? What do you think about that?
Patrick, that's okay. Just very briefly, I have a Psalm 91 in front of me, and I noticed the first stanza, "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust." And I guess my question is, what would you find objectionable about the words that are used there?
Oh, I hope you were listening to what I just said. I have no objection whatsoever to the words. Nothing whatsoever. It's a beautiful passage, and I love what the Bible says. It's the sappy melody that just does it for me. That's what I don't like.
You don't like it used as a hymn, in other words?
Personally, no. I mean, if somebody said, you know, what songs do you not want to ever hear at Mass, that would be high on the list for me.
Okay.
But again, just to emphasize, I want to be clear on this. The issue of music is a matter of taste. And I don't begrudge anyone what kind of taste they have. If they like a certain kind of music that I like, another example, you know, if I can dig a deeper hole for myself here. And thanks for the call, Chris. I appreciate it. I am absolutely allergic to praise and worship music. Cannot stand it. Drives me batty. Don't like to hear it. Don't want to hear it. And that's just how I am. I just don't like it. But I realize that most people, probably you listening to me right now, you like it, and I'm okay with that. That doesn't bother me. So please don't let it bother you that I don't like praise and worship music. Don't let that bother you. It's just a matter of taste. And that's one of the great things about being Catholic. It's a term called pluriformity. We have unity, but we also have pluriformity. So unity in the Catholic Church, as St. Augustine said, in all things, he says, in all things necessary, unity. And in the things, and I'm paraphrasing him, in things that are not necessary, have freedom. I'll use the word pluriformity, even though he didn't use that, and I'm botching the quote. But that's what's beautiful about being Catholic, is we have various kinds of art, various kinds of music, and other ways of expressing our creativity.
No heat, no judgment.
That's right. That's right. That's what I'm all about on this program. No heat, no judgment. Can I get an amen and a woman?
Amen and a woman.
Get that in your spirit.
Thank you. All right. Let us now go to Ray in New York City. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. My wife and I got married this year, and we just received some great news. We're expecting.
Congratulations. And, speak up a little bit, Ray. I want to hear your voice louder.
Sure.
Thank you.
So we're expecting, and wanted to get some of your recommendations on fatherhood and parenthood in general. Any book recommendations that you've written or anyone else?
Yeah.
In regards to preparation, practical, and also how can I use fatherhood to build my faith going forward as well?
Wonderful question. I'm really happy for you, you and your wife, and congratulations. When is the baby due?
October.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, one little addendum here. Don't forget that Patrick is a good name for a boy. FYI, that's all.
Patricio.
Patricio, está bien. So here's my recommendation. Get the stuff from Steve Wood. His website is dads.org. Now, I would prefer that you get it, if you can, from your local Catholic bookstore. Chances are, I mean, you've got a lot of them to choose from, I would think, in New York City. But go to your local Catholic bookstore and order it there so we can support them. But if you don't have one near you or they can't get it, just go to his website, dads.org, and under in the store section, look under fatherhood. And the particular book that I would like to recommend is called Legacy, A Father's Handbook for Raising Godly Children. And the reason I like that book so much, and I remember when I first read it, I was in Japan on a trip, and Steve sent me a PDF copy of the book. And I said, well, I'm not going to be getting back from this trip for like a week. And he said, well, do you mind just looking through the PDF of the book? And he wanted me to give him a blurb. So I had some downtime one afternoon. So I read it in PDF form, absolutely loved it. And I sent him back an enthusiastic blurb to promote the book. And so that particular book, of all the other ones that he's written that I'm more or less familiar with, that book I'm very familiar with. And the wisdom and the suggestions, the advice that he gives in this book called Legacy, A Handbook for Fathers for Raising Godly Children, it's priceless. And I would argue, you know, it's the best out there. So start with that if you're looking for a recommendation. Now, when you get to this section, you're going to see he's got other books. He's got a book called Christian Fatherhood. He's got a CD called Fathering Amidst the Storm. He's got another CD. It's actually an MP3 download, it looks like, How to Raise Godly Young Men. There's another MP3, How to Build Faith Through Work, Adventure, and Sports. Raising the Standard, A Challenge to Married Men. He's got another MP3 download called The 10 Secrets of Training Children for Mass. Another one called Passing the Torch, Achieving Excellence in Fatherhood. And there's more. I'm just quoting to you the ones that I see above the fold. So there's plenty there. But the one particular book, again, would be Legacy, A Father's Handbook for Raising Godly Children.
Got it. All right. Sounds good.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I could be of service, Ray. Thank you. I have to take a break. We'll do that now, and we'll come right back to your phone calls. Here's the number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. There's a Republican candidate for Senate who's got an interesting, let's just say, suggestion that he's using as part of his campaign, and that involves pornography. And you might be surprised at what he has to say on this issue. I'll tell you what that is when we come back from this quick timeout, so please stay right there.
Well, take some advice, Pilgrim.
Follow Patrick on Twitter. At Patrick Madrid. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. I had to wait for that bass lick to be done. 888-914-9149. How about Pete now in Rockford, Illinois? Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Pat. Excellent discussion this morning on profanity and worse, blasphemy.
Thank you.
It needs to be more widely broadcasted. OMG and other casual and grievous takings of the Lord's name in vain are blasphemies indeed, especially the cliche that OMG has become in our culture. Even the letters OMG to, sublimate blaspheming somewhat. Mm-hmm. But did I hear you say earlier that the more habituated a person becomes to profanity and blasphemy, the less culpable that individual is for using such sinful terms?
I did after...
I disagree, I would say.
Yeah, so I'll just clarify what I said. I did say that, but I said it in a slightly more nuanced way. What I was saying is that although the person's culpability could be diminished because of, in this case, if you're habituated to it, this kind of a lack of forethought, there's a lack of reflection before you do it. You just do it, and you're not doing it intentionally where you think, oh, I know this is a serious sin, but I'm going to do it anyway, which would be necessary for you to be formally culpable of a serious sin. But the point I made, or the nuance, was that I do believe that the root of an habitual sin is, or very likely would be, a mortal sin. So the beginnings of that habit would be mortally sinful. So in a given moment, without any reflection or thought, because the person is now so habituated to using profanity, and it just comes out, it's just the way he talks or she talks, what I was trying to say is that it could be in that particular act less culpable for that person because it's such an ingrained habit. but it stems from, or you might say it is rooted in a serious sin. So I don't mean to suggest that we should just dismiss that as something light or anything. I was trying to make a distinction between an act in the moment versus a whole series of acts that are connected to one another that go back to that root. Does that clarify it a bit more? Even if we still disagree, does that clarify it a bit more?
I believe I understand what you're saying, but I would say that, you know, when one is habitually sinful, and look, we're all sinful, we know that, and I've taken the Lord's name in vain more than once in my own life, I'm sorry to say, but I would say the more inured one is, the more habituated one is to sin, the more grave their condition is, and the more they need help. I understand
agree.
What you're saying. It becomes,
Yeah. Well, let me just offer a parallel. In moral theology, the church's general approach to something like, let's just take it away from swearing and let's bring it into, let's say, an habitual sin involving chastity, let's say. So let's imagine a solitary sin involving unchastity. Now, the problem, of course, can become habitual. And it can become so habitual that it is almost like an obsession. And the point I'm trying to make here is that the church recognizes that when your freedom is greatly diminished, your culpability for something that may indeed be seriously sinful, your culpability may be lessened because you are deprived in a certain way of your freedom or lack of reflection. Now, this is not to say that that kind of sin is ever okay, because it's not. But I would distinguish an act in the moment in saying, well, this person has become so habituated to this particular sin that it is almost a compulsion. That's probably the better word for it. But it's still gravely sinful at a formal level because the person allowed himself or herself to get into this in the first place. And so there is grave culpability when it comes to becoming habituated to that sin or some other sin. So it's a slight nuance, but you and I think are on the same page. It's still gravely sinful, whatever it may be. And the person really does need help. And like you said, even more help, because he's so mired now in this habit, it's going to be much more difficult for him to get out of that habit than if he just stumbled once and then says, I'm never going to go back to swearing. You're speechless, Pete.
Yes, sir. No. I didn't know it was my turn.
Okay.
No, I follow you, Pat. I follow you, and I think it's interesting also that you brought up pornography, because doesn't obscenity and profanity and, obscene speech, profanity and blasphemy, don't they align with pornography and, you know, sinful sexual obsession and compulsion, which we see still common today? These are all spiritual, as you said earlier, and I fully agree with you there. Mm-hmm. The way a person speaks is a direct reflection of their mind, and more important, their soul.
That's true.
And
you know a statement of Jesus Christ, Pete, that really has stuck with me probably since the first time I ever really noticed it. I don't know when that was. But Matthew 12:36, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they speak. And that is so granular that it's terrifying. If you don't love Jesus and if you're not serious about wanting to go to heaven, that should be terrifying. Because I look back in my life, I think of all the stupid things I've said in my life, he just says careless word. What about things that are worse than careless words? So when he says that we will have to give an account even for our careless words, for me, when I first really began to think about that, it became an incentive to myself anyway to say, I don't want to have a list any longer than it is right now. Whatever list I've got to deal with on the last day, I mean, I can't change that, but I'm not going to add to it. And so there have been moments in my life when I've been tempted to pop off with some stupid remark, and I've thought about that, and I've kept my mouth closed. So it's helped me.
But for the mercy of God, I agree with you, Pat. And if we don't discipline our thoughts, people think that their thoughts are you know, their thoughts are a free thought zone or a free fire zone. You can think anything you want as long as you don't express it verbally or physically. As you said before, obscenity, profanity is verbal violence. And you're absolutely right, of course.
Well,
if we don't
discipline
our thoughts, we'll never discipline our speech, and worse, our conduct, our physical conduct, our actions.
That is so true. You're speaking wisdom here, Pete. And it tracks with what Jesus said. If you are faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in big things. But if you're unfaithful in little things, you'll be unfaithful in big things. And I'm not saying that profanity, or certainly not blasphemy, I'm not saying those are little things, but they're easier to control, I think. And if one cannot control that, he's going to have a really hard time controlling other desires and appetites that are more powerful than wanting to just use a swear word. So I agree with you.
Great conversation, Pat. We'll revisit this more often.
Yes, I'll try to. I don't want to harp on it. I don't want people to think I'm a one-trick pony. But it came up today, so I thought it might be worthwhile to discuss it a little bit. But I appreciate the call, Pete. Let's go. Where are we going to go? Let's go to Ashley now in Kentucky. Good morning, Ashley.
Hey, Patrick. I really appreciate your conversation on the language. St. Anne helped me a lot get control of mine. But anyway.
Oh,
so
tell me about that. Do you mind? I mean, tell me what happened.
No, well, I just got in the habit of cussing. I mean, it became part of my, I talk and, just whatever came out. And my husband never does. And once we started having children, he was like, you've got to stop doing that. And I tried, but it was just a habit, terrible habit. And finally, I don't know why I even asked her, but I asked St. Anne, please help me with this. Mm-hmm. And I did a novena, and It stopped. Now,
no kidding.
I must
awesome.
Confess that I'm pregnant, so my filter is pretty much, it's non-existent right now. So I'm trying, haven't had to try a bit harder right now. But
well, you're trying, though. That's the main thing. You're making an effort.
I'm trying.
That's good.
But she really did help. I mean, it was like a switch flipped. It was remarkable. And I'm forever grateful for her help. So.
I can imagine. That's great.
That's
well,
fine, but
thanks for sharing that with me. Was that your question, or did you have another question?
No, I need your help. I need your opinion on a situation we've got going on. It has to do with COVID, and our family did not receive the vaccine for several reasons. But my husband's parents did, fully vaccinated, and they pretty much just quarantined for a couple years. Mm-hmm. They've come back out. However, they want us to test negative before they will see us in person.
And who are these people
the fact
again?
That my husband's parents.
Okay. Are they in frail health?
They've gone to concerts. No. They're in the higher risk category just because of their age.
Okay.
But they've gone to concerts. They've gone to plays. They've traveled across the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that for whatever reason, they're scared of us.
Hmm.
And I know that they are likely, or just as likely, maybe I'm wrong, to get COVID from a fully vaccinated person that they're sitting next during a concert or at dinner.
Yeah.
So it hurts my feelings, I guess. And I need you to tell me, do I, draw that line and say, no, we are not going to test. We are perfectly healthy. We don't, we're still mm-hmm. fine. We would never put you, if we had a fever or, any of the symptoms, we would never come around, we're not going to do it. Or am I supposed to humble myself? What does Jesus want me to do? What would you think?
Well,
and go ahead and test and go over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could go in either direction. And if you wanted to mortify your pride and just say graciously, okay, sure, we'll do that for you, knowing that it's unnecessary, but you're doing it out of not only to mortify your pride, but also as a gesture of kindness to them, even though it's, unnecessary, That's one way to go. There'd be nothing wrong with that. In fact, I could see some spiritual benefit there if it were me and it was an opportunity to prune my pride back a little bit. That can be a good thing. On the other hand, it is, to my mind at least, it's an unreasonable request given not only the state of affairs with COVID nowadays, not to mention the fact that I'll bet you they're vaxxed up to the hilt, and they've
boosted,
taken all the
everything.
Yeah. So, have you tried saying, well, you know, why would that be necessary when you're vaxxed up to the hilt and boosted, etc., and we are completely healthy? And I don't know if you've had COVID before, but that does provide some natural immunity of some degree. So maybe you could diffuse this by just asking them the question. I mean, you know, why do you think that's necessary? You don't have to say that you don't think it's necessary, but ask them, why do you think it's necessary? Or, you know, is that really necessary? And maybe they'll say, well, I guess not. You know, they might just back away from it, and then you've avoided unpleasantness. That might be one way to handle
it. We had COVID, and so their doctor told them that they had a 3-month safety zone. And so that was up May 23rd, and we're supposed to get together this weekend.
Well, if you were to say, you know what, if you wouldn't mind paying for the cost of the test, sure, we'll get tested, no problem. But if they're asking you to bear the expense of the test, I don't think they're cheap. I mean, I've had a bunch of tests done over the last year or two, but they're not cheap. Well, what would Jesus do? Yeah, I think Jesus would seek to be as accommodating as possible, as long as it didn't involve doing something that you knew was wrong. So I think either way, you win. And if you want to gain some spiritual benefit, maybe go the humble route. Thanks, Ashley.